All right. I don't know if that sets a record for straightening out a Zoom problem, but it seemed to have at least resolved itself. So this, as you can see now, this is the passage that I was reading to you from something that Bialik himself wrote about the poem that became the song Techezakna. And if you look four lines from the bottom, he wrote as follows. Hashir Techezakna, the poem, Kvar nichnas la pardes ve'avar b'shalom et sha'ar ha'chamishim. I don't know if you know that Bialik attended the famous Volozhin Yeshiva. He wasn't the only person of importance in the yeshuv in Israel to have attended the Volozhin Yeshiva. The first Ashkenazi chief rabbi, Rabbi Abraham Yitzchak Cook, was also a student at the Volozhin Yeshiva. Micha Yosef Berdichevsky had been a student at the Volozhin Yeshiva. So Bialik is able to weave into his poetry Talmudic and Midrashic references and phraseology. So Nichnas la pardes va'avar b'shalom is a rather famous line. It's probably best known from its appearance in the Talmud in Masechet Chagigah, where it describes something called Arba'a Nichnasu la pardes, that there were four Jewish scholars who went into a place where they weren't supposed to be. And of only one of them, Rabbi Akiva, it says, Nichnas b'shalom v'yatza b'shalom, that he entered whole and he left whole. So the idea of perfection is somehow embodied in that, and Bialik is using it here to describe the poem. And then he writes as follows, Muftachani, he says, I'm certain, Shebizman bin Hazmanim, that in some time in the future, Yashir Eze Bachur et Ashir Hazeh, somebody will be singing Techezakna, Bli Lada'at Afilu Shel Mihu, without even knowing who was the composer. And then he notes as follows, and I don't know whether he noted this wryly or whether he noted it somewhat proudly. Kikach darkam shel hapizmonim ha'amamiyim be'emet. He says this indeed is the way of folk songs. Folk songs simply become part of an ethos. They become part of a culture, as though it doesn't even really matter anymore who the composers were. So as I said, this is just simply a follow-up on our look at the song Techezakna last week. Okay. We move along now. I want to take a look at some of the songs that have typified or characterized the revisionist movement in Israel. And what we have here is a song that was written in 1920 to commemorate an historical event. The Battle of Tel Chai was fought on March 1st, 1920, between Arabs and a Jewish defensive force that was protecting the village of Tel Chai, which is in the Galil HaTzafon in the northern Galilee. There are some who say that this is an isolated incident. Other historians tend to see this as part of a larger campaign that they call the Franco-Syrian War. If you remember your early 20th century history, the World War I was resolved at a conference that took place at the Palace of Versailles in France. And at this conference at Versailles, the territories that had been held previously by the Ottoman Empire in the Middle East and in North Africa were divided amongst the victors, primarily amongst the British and the French. Parts of Syria were awarded, and Lebanon, what came to be known as the Levant, were awarded to the French. what was called Transjordan and what subsequently became Saudi Arabia and parts of the Hashemite Kingdom of Iraq were under the control of the British, as of course was Palestine. And there were dissident elements in both the French and the British territories that were simply not at all satisfied with the way the territory had been divided. So what took place in the early 1920s has been called by some historians the Franco-Syrian War. That is when certain dissident elements in Syria actually rebelled against the government that had been installed there by the French. Jews at Tel Chai were commanded at the time by Yosef Joseph Trumpeldor, who had a rather illustrious career as a military man, something that was very unusual in those days for Jews. He had served already as an officer in the Russian army during the Russo-Japanese War that was in the first decade of the 20th century. He had also commanded a Jewish unit that fought alongside the British in Turkey during World War I, the famous Gallipoli campaign, famous or maybe infamous because the British loss there, a considerable loss, has been attributed by most historians to Winston Churchill, and by virtue of his experiences, both in Russia and in World War I, he was one of the most experienced military men in the Zionist movement and had been sent to command Tel Chai, which was under threat. The song that we're about to hear, Bagalil B'Tel Chai, is actually a Hebrew adaptation. We're seeing this not for the first time, of a Polish folk song. The Polish folk song, like Bagalil B'Tel Chai, as you can see, was composed in order to honor a fallen soldier. The words themselves, in the Galilee in Tel Chai, Trumpeldor fell. He fell fighting on behalf of Amenu, our nation, Biad Arzenu, on behalf of our land, Derech Harim, Derech Gvaot, over hill, over dale, Ratz Ligol Et Shem Tel Chai. He hastened in order to save or spare the name of Tel Chai and to make an announcement La'achim Sham to fellow colonists, to fellow settlers, Zionists, L'chu B'ikvotai, to follow in his footsteps. And his charge to them, if you wish, his testament to them was, B'chol makom, everywhere, B'chol rega, at all times, Tiz kuruoti, may you remember me, King Ilchamti, I fought, Gam nafalti, and I fell, Biad moladeti, on behalf of my homeland. Kol hayom ani charashti, by day I would engage in agriculture, I would plow, Balayla at night, Kne rove biyadi achazti, I would stand guard, ad harega acharon, and he did so until his last breath. And of course, you're all acquainted, and if you aren't acquainted, I brought the picture of the famous statue at Tel Chai, on which there is an inscription that is attributed to Trumpeldor, although, of course, there are, as in almost all cases, those who challenge the assumption, who is reported to have said on his deathbed, Tov lamut ba'ad arzenu, it's good to die for one's land. In any event, here's the song.
Shalom, lechu
You can see here on the Zemereshet website that they consider the tune, it says, Amami Ukraini. I am certainly not these days going to try to stick my head, as it were, between Poland and Ukraine to decide whether the tune, in fact, was originally Polish or whether it was Ukrainian. Speaking about Tel Chai and about Trumpeldor leads us into the next song, which isn't really about Trumpeldor at all. It is, although it's a song, to make sure that you're seeing this. Okay. It's a song that is the anthem of an organization that was named for Trumpeldor. And that's Beitar. Although Beitar spells its name with a tav, and Trumpeldor spelled his name with a tet, I suppose that that was a rather a small difference. And since Beitar also conjured up images of Bar Kokhba and of the Bar Kokhba rebellion and of Jewish independence, so they kept the tav. But its original name was Brit Trumpeldor. The association, if you wish, the covenant, literally, of the followers of Yosef Trumpeldor. And what we have here, as I said, is pretty much the anthem, having been written by Jabotinsky, the leader of revisionist Zionism himself. There again, like many of the songs that we've looked at, it underwent several revisions. The original version of the song was sent by Jabotinsky to a student union in Kovno in November of 1929. The Jewish student union was called Yardenia, naming itself after the Jordan River, which of course features prominently in the song. And it was published in a journal called Netivot that was published in those days in Kovna, and it appeared in 1930, so that in some sources it's dated to 1929, which is when it was written, and in others to 1930, which when it was first published. We actually, let's take a listen to it first.
Oh,
just to quickly translate it, the song highlights the importance, the centrality of the Jordan River and of the land alongside the Jordan River to particularly revisionist Zionism. Kiamutsha batavech lagesher, like the central pillar keeping a bridge up, afkechot hashidra le'enosh, like the spinal column in a human body, la'artzi, when it comes in geographical terms, kav hatzir v'hakesher, the central line, so to speak, hu yarden ha'yarden ha'kadosh, is the Jordan River, which he even, using a form of hyperbole, even calls the Holy Jordan River. And the refrain, of course, is shtei gadot la'yarden, there are two banks to the Jordan River, Zo shalanu zo gamkein, each one of them belongs to us. Imartzi delala uktana, even if my land is somewhat small, he sheli, it belongs to me. Mirosha ad kitza, from top to bottom. Nistarat miyam yeshimona, it spreads from the sea, which is to its west, to wilderness, which is more to its east than to its south. Viyarden hayarden beemtza, and again, in the center is the Jordan River. Sham, there, at the Jordan, Yirvelo Mishefa Va'osher, the Jordan is makes the land adjacent to it fertile, and it therefore produces an abundance for everybody. Ben Arab for Arabs, Muslims, Ben Nazaret for Christians, Bni for Jews, Ki Digli Degel Tohar Va'osher, and my flag, pure and straight, Yitaher Shtei Gedot Yardeni, should fly, as it were, should be emblazoned on both sides of the Jordan River. I have a particular affinity for the final stanza. My mother, whose yahrzeit I observe tonight, was a member of Beitar at some point in her youth, and I've often heard her sing Shtei Gadot LaYarden, but the only stanza that I ever heard her sing, and it may have been the only one that she knew, is the final one, the one that says Shtei Adai, both of my arms, Hikdashti Lach Moledet, I have devoted, as it were, or dedicated to my homeland, Shtei Adai, both of my arms, L'magal, both engage in agriculture, and magal is a scythe, Umagain, as well as take up arms in its defense. Ach, however, Tishkach Yemini HaBogedet, and this is, of course, a play on Psalm 137, when the Levites were asked to sing the songs of Zion. They said, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, if we were to get Jerusalem, Tishkach Yemini, then as though the right hand should go numb or be paralyzed. So here he's saying that my right hand will be a bogedet, it will be a treacherous right hand, meaning that it deserves to be paralyzed, as it were, imeshkachet smol hayardein, if somehow I overlooked the importance of the left bank of the Jordan. Of course, the left bank, called the west bank of the Jordan, as opposed to the east bank of the Jordan, has, of course, in the years, particularly since 1967, become a considerable a crucible for political and other events in the state of Israel. On your source sheet, there is also at the bottom a little note from the New York Times. It says the Jabotinsky Memorial was unveiled. The memorial of Vladimir Jabotinsky, founder of the Jewish Legion under Lord Allenby in Palestine during the World War, and president of the new Zionist organization, who died last August, was honored yesterday. So he died then in August of 1940, right? Was honored yesterday in July of 1941, when a monument was unveiled at his grave. Where is his grave? In the new Montefiore Cemetery in Pine Long, Long Island. That's simply a somewhat roundabout way of pointing out that Vladimir Jabotinsky happened to have been in Hunter, New York, in August of 1940 when he passed away. So he was buried in the United States, but he was subsequently disinterred and reinterred in Israel Probably I don't have this note in front of me, but I would imagine that it was, it probably did not take place during any of the time that Ben-Gurion presided over the state of Israel, but surely once Menachem Begin and the Chirut party came into power, that is probably when Jabotinsky's remains were reinterred in Israel. And from Tel Chai in the north, we come to Jerusalem itself, and we have an opportunity to look at a very favorite song of Jerusalem. Its official name is Agada, the legend, better known again, as is the case with many songs, by its opening words, Al Sfat Yam Kineret. I'm sure you all know this. You're welcome, of course, to sing along with it. But as you do, I want to point something out. If you look at your, well, you can't, I can do it here. I can share this screen with you. Okay, let me get this up. Okay. Make it a bit larger. Here we go. Okay. So the words to Al Sfat Yam Kineret were written by a well-known poet and author, Yaakov Fichman. You can see his photograph here on the right. Again, a rather dapper-looking dude. And the tune was written by a music teacher in Tel Aviv named Hanina Karchovsky. And you can see his photograph here on the left. It would seem that handlebar mustaches seem to have been rather de rigueur, in at least in Tel Aviv, in the years following World War I. And here are the words to the poem, okay, as they were published for the very first time, okay, Al Sfat Yam Kineret, right, by the banks of the Kineret, the sea. Armon Rav Tiferet, there is a grand castle. Gan El Sham Natua, Gan El, not literally a divine garden, but divine only in the sense of hyperbole, right? A beautiful garden was planted there. Boetz Lo Yanua, and in it were trees. Migar Sham, who lives in the palace. Rak Na'ar, only a young man, a youth. Ka'of Bidmiya'ar, like a bird solitary in the forest. Lomed sham Torahu, and what does he do? He studies Torah. Mipi Eliyahu, again the Talmudic Midrashic motif that Elijah the prophet comes and helps people to understand Torah. That's why whenever an argument cannot be resolved in the Talmud, you find the word teku. And there's a difference of opinion. Some say that teku is just a perfectly ordinary Aramaic word that means kind of like, you know, time out or hold it, right, in abeyance. And others say that it's an acronym. And if it's an acronym, then it is said to stand for Tishbi, one of the epithets of Eliyahu, right, Tishbi, Yitaretz, will resolve kushyot, questions, uba'ayot, and contradictions. So Lomed Sham Torahu, this young man is learning, studying Torah, Mipi Eliyahu, with the assistance of Elijah the prophet. Has, right, quiet, Galo Koleach, the waves aren't roaring, the waves aren't crashing, Kolof HaPoreach, even the birds stand still, Omed Vishomea, everyone as it was stands and hearkens, Torat El Bolea, so that they can absorb the Torah. And this is a Talmudic motif. The Talmud in Masechet Shabbat, in the vicinity of Daf Samach Gimel, where it has a rather large collection of Midrashic motifs surrounding Matan Torah, the original revelation of the law at Mount Sinai. One of the things that it says is that at the time that God addressed the Jewish people and said, or at least recited at least the first two of the Ten Commandments, Anochi Hashem Elohecha and Lo Yiyeh Lecha Elohim Acherim Al Panai, the language actually says, Of Lo Poreach, that as though nature itself, not just the children of Israel who were expecting this to be a momentous occasion. Not only they stood silently awaiting the voice of God, but somehow even nature intuited that this was a moment that required everybody to stop what they customarily do and to pay attention to it. Therefore, the theme that he strikes here, that the waves stopped crashing, that the birds stopped chirping, as I said, is clearly borrowed from this Talmudic Midrashic motif. But what I want to show you is this. This, again, is the way in which the words and the tune were published for the first time. Now, if you can look at it, I hope you can see it. I can probably make it just a wee bit larger without losing anything in the process. You notice the instructions, la'at uvasheket, right? These are musical instructions, right? That this is to be played slowly and quietly. But notice very interestingly, right? Because it's Hebrew, even the musical notes here are written from right to left. Okay? As opposed to a later version of the same words and the same tune, right? The same musical instructions, right? Using the typical Italian for slow and quiet, right? But notice that in this version, right, the words and the musical notes appear, as is more customary in music, from left to right. Now, only a few years ago, somebody did a dissertation, a doctoral dissertation at the Hebrew University in the Department of Jewish Musicology. And among the music that they studied, that this woman studied, were these two versions of the music to Al Sfat Yam Kinneret. And her conclusion in her dissertation is as follows. Hamaskana hamitbakeshati, the conclusion at which we have to arrive through this comparison, she says, is, this is her name, Boaz, that was her name, Bavodatashis Kelemaila. Namely, what is the conclusion? Shefichman katav milachatchila et agada, that in his original composition of the words of the poem, he intended it for it to be read b'hat'ama eretz Yisraelit. It was to be read not in the what we call the Yiddish inflected pronunciation of Hebrew, but rather in the Sephardic inspired pronunciation of Hebrew, uv'mishkal mishulash, and in a particular beat. And you can see this is what it comes out. And if you pay attention when we listen to the music, you might hear it. Okay. It goes as follows. Al Sifat Yam Kineret Armon Rav Tif Eret Gan El Shamnatua Boetz Lo Yanua. Right. Every third syllable gets accented. Al Sfat Yam Kineret, as opposed to Armon Rav Tiferet. So these are the two versions that she compared, and her conclusion that in this case, as we have seen already and will continue to see, it was written with the original intention of being pronounced Sephardic inspired Hebrew rather than the older Yiddish inflected form. And with that, let me get it up for you.
Oh,
pick this for several reasons. One, because of the few that I listened to, this seemed to be the one that where the accentuation seemed to be following what that woman, Boaz's son, had indicated in her dissertation. And secondly, because this isn't what Ran Eliran is typically associated with, not this kind of song and not these kinds of words generally. Okay. And with that, we can move on. And I'm going here to... Okay. So, Rachel, a poetess, right, born in Russia, moved to Palestine in 1909. She lived in the kibbutz of Kinneret. She was well known to and kept the company of some of the other outstanding Russian or Polish Zionists of this era. Yitzhak Ben Tzvi, in particular, has been mentioned as a colleague of hers. This is a poem that she wrote in 1927. The words ve'ulai and perhaps lo ayu hadvarim me'olam. Maybe this never really happened, meaning it's all a dream. Ulai me'olam lo ishkamti im shachar lagan. Maybe that I never really woke up early in the morning to go out into the field. Lovdo b'ze'at apai, and to work with the sweat of my brow. Me'olam, either forever or never. B'yamim arukim v'yokdim, in days of continuous heat. Arukim v'yokdim shel katsir, the days of the harvest. If you know, of course, the barley harvest takes place in the month of Nisan, the wheat harvest in the months of Iyar and Iyar and Sivan, the months of the late spring, early summer. Bimromea gala musat alomot, at the top of a wagon that's loaded with sheaves of grain. Lo natati koli bishir, is it possible that I never sat there on top of a wagon singing songs? Me'olam, is it perhaps possible that never taharti b'tchelot shokta uvitom, that I never, as it were, purified myself in the blue waters of the Kinneret? And hear the words, hoy Kinneret sheli, again, following upon the previous song, which was Asfatiam Kinneret, hoy Kinneret sheli, hehayit, are you something real? O chalamti chalom, or is it really, has it all really been a dream? Okay. In her lifetime, first on account of World War I, she, as I mentioned previously, and many other Russian citizens of the Land of Israel were either exiled by the Turks or because of difficult circumstances in the Yishuv during World War I, they simply found it impossible to maintain themselves there, and left voluntarily, more or less. So during World War I, she left Palestine and was stranded in Europe. And later again, she spent some time in Europe. So it could be again that it's during this period of time that she's in Europe and reflecting on her earlier experiences as a teenager in the Land of Israel, that she wrote this poem about, was it real or was it all just a dream? There are a lot of different versions of this song. This is my favorite. Also happens to be one of the songs that I recall clearly having learned from my mother.
Ve'ulai ימים ארוכים ויוקדים, ארוכים ויוקדים של קציר. ממרומי הגנה מוסת אלומות, לא נתתי קולי בשיר. מעולם לא תהרתי בתחילת שוקתה,
that, by the way, was Nachama Handel, one of my favorite singers. But not everybody was singing or writing poems that are, you know, full of pathos. Sometimes songs were shorter, and sometimes they were a little more upbeat, and sometimes they really had no great significance to them. And I'd like to share one of those kinds of songs with you. In fact, here we have an interesting thing. We get to hear the song sung by its composer. This was written in 1927 by Yedidya Admon, and it says, if you can see let me get the text up here. It's just below where we were a moment ago. There we go. So you see, it says the words Nilim, Yedidya Admon, but then it also says Min HaMikorot, because once again, he has woven biblical verses into the song. At the very bottom of the page, you can see the Marei Mekomot, the sources for the biblical verses that he wove into the song. And the Lachan, the tune, was composed by the same person who cobbled the words together, right? Yedidya Admon. And as you see, the words are Gamal, Gamali, Gamal, Gamali, my camel. Chaver Atali, you are my friend, my companion. Bezif Zif, Zif Zif is gravel. And again, it seems to reflect a time we know of well in the early years of the British Mandate, when many Jews were employed in road construction. And here he interpolates a verse, Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkanotecha Yisrael. We know that well. And then once again, Gamal Gamali, Gamal Gamali, Chaver Atali Bezif Zif. And another biblical verse, Hein Am Klavi Yakom Vecha Ariyat Nasa. The Jewish people rises like a lion or like a lioness. It's curious, both of these psukim, as you can see from the notes on the bottom, come from adjacent chapters in Sefer Bimidbar. They happen to both have been originally recited by non-Jew. Right? They're both part of the prophecy of Bilaam. Whether that had some personal significance to Yedidya Admon or whether they just happened to be two things that he liked, I have really no idea. But in any event, here is the song. Listen carefully to the tune. Gamal, 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 gamal arguably, this is rather a distinctive tune. It sounds more Middle Eastern than Eastern European. And indeed, this Yedidya Admon spent the World War I years with his family in Egypt. And it could very well be that it was there in Egypt that he became accustomed to, who picked up the sounds. You can hear the oud in the background. And it may very well be that this was his attempt to adapt Middle Eastern music. Mind you, of course, in 1927, the Jewish yeshuv in Palestine is still overwhelmingly Eastern European. Right? We have yet to see the large-scale immigrations from Arab countries that came in the 1940s and the 1950s. So it's rather remarkable, rather, that in 1927 you already have somebody. It may have been daring in 1927. In fact, I found another Hebrew song that Yedidya Admon composed, and it makes the same impression. And I'd like you to hear it as it's sung. You can see it, okay? As it's sung by Shoshana Damari. So here you have a Middle Eastern tune being sung by a rather quintessentially Middle Eastern singer. The words are Shedamati, my fields, Im Shachar Zrati Habidim'a, at dawn I awoke to sow the field with sweat again or in tears. Tfilat HaYogev Nishma'a, and the prayer of the farmer is heard. So this again is a song based upon the agricultural efforts of the early Yishuv. And note again that the tune by the same Yedidya Admon, actually the same year, 1927. So again, you can hear the beat in the background, the Middle Eastern beat, the use of the tof, of the drum. And again, it probably was rather daring in 1927. Unfortunately, because we had a bit of a late start, we'll have to call it here. Let me have a quick look at the chat, and we'll pick up next week with Nivne Artzenu, which I thought we might have time for today, but it deserves much more than the 5 minutes that we could devote to it now. So let me go back here to the beginning. Oh, okay, thank you. Somebody managed to produce a real link to the source sheet. Okay. All right. Okay. And this was all still from the beginning. Tel Chai is in the Northern Galilee of Israel, kind of, you know, if you look at what they call the finger, the etzba, the part that kind of juts out into Lebanon, there you go, in the north near Metula. Okay, today's sources.
Are you having
again.
A session on Purim?
Pardon me?
Purim is next Tuesday.
Oh, you know, I don't know. I don't know if there's a policy. I will make an inquiry of Rabbi Kelman, and if there is the policy, then we'll follow the policy. If there's no policy, we'll make a decision. But one way or the other, we'll make sure that everybody is properly notified.
Thank you.
I don't want to make a commitment now and find out that that the infrastructure is unavailable. So much better that we just hold it in abeyance and we'll send out a notice. I see somebody corrected me. It was Levi Eshkol who brought Jabotinsky's amends. I said, oh, the only thing I was certain about is that it couldn't have been during Ben-Gurion. Okay. The pictures of Fichman, okay, I will post it. I will post it in next week. I have it in a separate file. I will post it next week. Okay. The revisionist movement is another name for what has subsequently been called Chayrut. It's the movement founded by Jabotinsky that claimed the West Bank of the Jordan as an integral part of the ancestral land of Israel. Okay, I'm very bad at this. I'm very politically naive. I try not to be incorrect, but I'll admit to being naive. If she was not a poetess, she was a poet. Okay. I do think that in Hebrew, we would still not call her a mishorer, but a mishoreret. But again, what can you do about that? Okay.
And the street is called Hamishoreret.
Yeah, as I was saying, in Hebrew, it has to be a mishoreret. If in English, it's still a poet, not a poetess, I yield to conformity. Yes, Yehuda Sharet was the younger brother of Moshe Sharet, Israel's second prime minister. Okay. Very good. As to, again, whether it's a class on Purim, we'll let everybody know. Thank you again, everybody, for being here, and thank you for your patience at the beginning. I understand that I've now been given instructions on how to make myself a host. You know, the Talmud says, Ein oreach machnis oreach, but I guess they didn't have Zoom in mind, so I guess I can become a host and I can befriend you as well. So thank
you. There is a book of Rachel's poetry chained onto Yitzchak Ben Zvi's grave at the Ganya Kibbutz.
Yeah, I used the word, I deliberately used the word that he's spoken of as a colleague of hers because
there's
a lot of, you know, back of the room, you know, chatter about just what the relationship really was.
Yeah, but the book is attached, you know. It's very touching, you know.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
If we do have a class next week, then I'll be able to wish everybody a Purim Sameach on Purim. If there is no class next week, then I can wish you all a Purim Sameach now. And when we meet in 2 weeks, I can say, I hope you all had a Purim Sameach. So one way or the other, take care.
Thank you. And to you too.
Thank you.